Pathways. This is Tom Park, your host this week, and it's my pleasure, after many, many moons, to welcome back Laura Davis.
It's wonderful to be back.
Folks, most of you know Laura from her first big, big hit, The Courage to Heal, and Laura has been such a leader in this field for so long, in abuse recovery and emotional growth. So Laura, I want to mention your new book, because of course the occasion for you coming to town is a book tour. The title, I Thought We'd Never Speak Again. Subtitle, The Road from Estrangement to Reconciliation. Reconciliation. How timely, how great. Laura, I'm just hungry for you to give my audience these kernels on reconciliation. So what's the inspiration? I mean, some of it's obvious, but what is the gust behind this?
You know, this is my sixth book, and each one has come very strongly out of my own life experience. You know, my books just track my own evolution. And I wrote four on healing from sexual abuse because that was what my life was about for many years. And as I began to heal and move on, I didn't want to focus on that anymore. And because I didn't need to, you know, after years of having to focus on it. And then I had children, and I wrote a parenting book. And this book, the inspiration for it, has been the healing of the relationship with my mother. She and I were deeply estranged for 8 years. And, you know, our relationship became rocky probably when I was an adolescent. I think I was a really rough teenager. Now that I'm a mother, I think, oh, my God. I hope that I don't have to go through what my mother had to go through.
Yeah,
but
let's not have karma here, you know?
I hope the payback comes in a different way. But anyway, starting when I was a teenager, we had a rough relationship, and I made a lot of choices in my life that my mother would not have chosen for me, and she didn't flow with those choices. You know, each time it was like an affront to her. And so things were not good between us, and then when I was 28, I remembered being sexually abused by her father. And when I told her...
Did you say 28?
28 years old, yeah. Yeah, so that was now 17 years ago, and I was so devastated, although suddenly so many things that hadn't worked in my life made sense. It was like a puzzle, all these pieces just falling together. And when I told her, she was shocked and devastated, and she was very angry, but she wasn't angry at him, and he was long dead at that point. She was furious at me because I was tarnishing the image of this man that she had deeply loved. And so the rift that we already had became almost insurmountable at that point, and I felt betrayed. I felt like I was going through the hardest thing I had ever gone through in my life, and my mother and her whole side of the family was abandoning me. And from her point of view, she felt humiliated and angry. She felt like I was not only spreading lies, but once The Courage to Heal was published 3 years later, I was now spreading them on national TV. And, you know, there were incredible feelings of betrayal on both sides. And at the time, I couldn't imagine any way to resolve the situation except for her coming around and saying, now I believe you, it really happened, I know it happened, I'm sorry I wasn't there for you. I couldn't imagine any other resolution. You know, I had a very black and white way of thinking. And she couldn't imagine making peace with me unless I said, you know, no, it didn't happen and I'm not going to talk about this anymore. But what she and I have achieved is I talk about four types of reconciliation, and one of them is agreeing to disagree. And that's how we began our reconciliation. As I began to heal and really recover from the abuse, where it was no longer so much right in the forefront of my consciousness all the time, I started to... It became less and less important that she believe me. I mean, I didn't need that validation. I already knew what had happened. And I started to develop more compassion for her and started thinking about what did it mean for her that this man was her father, and that maybe she did something right and that she raised me to be strong enough to handle this, something that she was not able to handle. And I started to shift my whole way of thinking. I didn't stop saying it happened. I didn't back down. I didn't recant. And she didn't believe me. And then I became a mother. And for me, you know, the first time I held my son Eli, I felt this incredible love and tenderness that I had never experienced before. And it felt like my heart just cracked open. And I felt this amazing kinship to mothers everywhere. And that included my own mother. And that was a real turning point for me because I wanted a grandmother for my children. She really wanted to be that grandmother. And I began to realize that there was a lot more to my mother and a lot more potential for our relationship than just her denial about the sexual abuse. And so we basically acknowledged we don't see eye to eye about this. And I just said, I'm no longer going to try to convince you. And she said, I'm no longer going to try to convince you either. And we just decided to put it aside and to figure out what else was left between us. And over the years, I've discovered quite a bit.
Indeed. So reconciliation, and in these days, with what's going on in our common experience in the culture, the world, there's such need for reconciliation. Laura, have you expanded this reconciliation concept to really embrace so many different flavors of reconciliation?
That was always very important to me from the time I first began working on this. In fact, I had a little argument with my editor about it along the way because she wanted me to write a book that was just about interpersonal relationships, you know, families. And I just said, I can't do that. To me, this is about healing the world and healing the planet. And the very same principles that make it possible for two siblings to make peace with each other, you know, for you to make peace with your best friend that you haven't seen in 10 years, are the exact same principles that would allow Arafat and Sharon to heal what's happening in the Middle East. I mean, it seems impossible, but there's a certain kind of vision and determination and courage that is required. And reconciliation is reconciliation, no matter what situation you're in. I have found that because I've had, not just with my mother, but other relationships that I've been able to heal, I'm much more of an optimist than I was before, because I was in a situation that seemed utterly impossible from my perspective, and I was able to do something to make it right. And I was able to develop a vision and a way of looking at it that was bigger than what I had before. Instead of seeing it in a very narrow black and white way, I suddenly saw the color and I saw the gray and I saw a lot more potential. And I feel that way about the situation out in the world, too. You know, I like to think about people like Gandhi, you know, who went to the British and said, you know, you have imprisoned us for 300 years, but I refuse to hate you. You know, or Nelson Mandela reaching out his hand to his captors who'd kept him in prison for more than 20 years and bringing down apartheid, something none of us ever could have imagined happening. So I think it is possible. And I think, you know, especially after September 11th, you know, I started this book way before that. In fact, it went to press on September 18th.
No.
Yeah. Kidding. Yeah, I wrote a whole new introduction because I felt I had to address what happened on September 11th.
That's significant. Thanks for mentioning that.
And I feel like all of us, we go through different experiences in life that make us open to the idea of reconciliation. Sometimes it's something personal, like for me it was parenthood. For someone else it might be being near death. You know, I had dinner last night with a friend in Portland who is a social worker for hospice, and she was just saying it's amazing the things that people decide they want to deal with when they're near death. So sometimes it's your own mortality, sometimes it's the death of someone close to you. Sometimes it's a brush with your own mortality, and sometimes it's something like September 11th, where we realize suddenly that life is short and that people are precious, and it makes people suddenly much more open to the idea of reconciliation and really asking, you know, what about my brother that I haven't talked to in 20 years? What about my mother? What about my cousin? You know, what about that person I've been holding a grudge against and I can't even remember what it's about? Maybe I can reach out to them. You know, we live in a society that's so... We throw things away, you know, where everything's disposable. And geographically, we pick up and we move. And it's hard to hold on to relationships. They're not valued the way they used to be. And I think people are really starting to question that.
So your research and your experience has been that when the question goes deep, when the issues become really like life serious issues, reconciliation is one of the big things that usually comes up. There's usually reconciliation issues that come up for folks when they're making the big decisions.
Right? Well, there's a desire for it. And I think...
So, I mean, it's importance. This is something that's commonly this important in human beings, although it oftentimes takes a great big stimulus to get us over the hump. But most of us are carrying, don't you think, some reconciliation file?
Yeah, right. The list of the people that we've crossed off our list. You know, I think when I meet someone who says, I don't have anyone like that, and I don't know of anyone in my family like that, that's definitely the exception. Most people have a story to tell me in the first 5 minutes after they hear what I'm doing. And, you know, sometimes it's something small. Sometimes it's because of immaturity. Sometimes it's a stubbornness, you know, an unwillingness or inability to say, you know, I'm sorry, that was stupid of me. And so sometimes these things are healed quickly if one person is just willing to step up to the plate and apologize. When it's a deeper violation, which sometimes it is, then there's a whole different process that comes into play. In order to reconcile with my mother, I had to really spend years focusing on healing from the sexual abuse. Until I took that step and dealt with that injury, there was no way I could turn around and have a relationship with someone who didn't believe me. And even now when I talk to people who are at the beginning of that process, they can't understand what I did because it's so far from where they are. And if you had asked me, you know, 17 years ago, would I ever have a relationship with my mother like I do now, I couldn't have imagined it. Another woman I interviewed, she had been estranged from her family for many years, and she began to consider whether she wanted to get back in touch with him. And what she did is she made a list on a big piece of paper, and on one side she listed all the things about them that were good, that she had gotten positive, and then she made a list of all the negatives. And when she was done, there was a really substantial list on both sides. And she said for her that was really an eye-opener. And it made her realize that people aren't all good or all bad, that even people who do monstrous things can sometimes have good qualities. And understanding that was very, very important in her life. You know, one man said to me, he said, it's hard to talk about the violence and the tenderness in my family because there was so much of both.
Yes.
And I think there's a certain maturity that you need to have to reconcile. And part of it is the ability to embrace that kind of paradox, to see the complexity of human beings and not just categorize them as, you know, this person is no good, this person is good. Even the father who taught you to ride a bike maybe couldn't keep a roof over your head, you know, and couldn't hold down a job and couldn't provide for you. And, you know, the enemy that you were taught to hate and fear plays the violin so sweetly, it just breaks your heart. And there's these paradoxes in life. And being able to really embrace that, I think, opens the door to reconciliation.
Lovely. Okay, here's what's coming up for me. The territory to really move through and have a healing reconciliation, is it more a heart territory or more a comprehension head territory?
It's a heart. That's a wonderful question. It is definitely the heart. Let me have that. I want to read something.
Okay.
If I could find this one little quote that exactly says that. And it's definitely it's not always words, too. You know, a lot of people are not verbal. I started working on this with the...
Well, even if you think we're verbal, but look at me, you think you're really a verbal person. But the power in this system that I live in is really heart.
Yeah.
It's a power.
It's a heart thing because, you know, sometimes being right is one of the loneliest places in the world. So, you know, in your head, you could be right. The other person, you know, you've called them 10 times and they've never called you. They wronged you and they're not going to acknowledge it and apologize. But it doesn't mean you don't want to step forward. To step forward and go back in a relationship, you don't have to be a doormat. It really depends on your own perspective and where you are. This thing I wanted to read, the mind creates the abyss and the heart crosses it.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Yeah. So,
who's that from?
It's from a yoga master.
Appropriately enough.
Yeah, and it's a very powerful thing to connect with your heart. And I think reconciliation is a matter of your love and your caring. It's not a matter of intellectually figuring something out. And we tend to keep score in relationships. You know, you did this and you didn't do that. You said this, you did this to me and you didn't apologize. I've called you and you need to call me. And if you want to reconcile, you really have to give up keeping score. And you have to decide, is this a relationship worth fighting for? And also, one thing I try to teach people is that there are many levels of reconciliation. You know, we've all seen a lot of TV movies where there's this deep deathbed reconciliation scene and there's these tears and this apology. And it's not usually like that. You know, occasionally it is, and there's this deep healing where both people are transformed, and that's fabulous when that happens.
Cathartic. Yes.
Yeah, but much more often it's one person changing their perspective and changing their expectations of the relationship, getting a much more realistic handle on what's possible. And sometimes it's accepting less than the ideal, but sometimes even a small amount of reconciliation is valuable. You know, if you could go to a family gathering with your brother-in-law who you can't stand, and you could digest your food without feeling sick because you've made a shift in the way you are in that gathering, that's worthwhile. It doesn't mean he has to be your best friend. But sometimes even small steps towards reconciliation can be really change the quality of our experience.
Okay. I want to draw you into some consideration of some fundamentals here. First, the costs of not reconciling, and then the fruits or reconciling. Mm-hmm. I'd like to look at both sides of this. And in a general way, what is it costing us emotionally and practically in life to roast in not being reconciled? And then, of course, the fruits is going to be the...
I'm imagining juice. Roasting. Imagining the roasting.
I spent a substantial time broken from relationships that are really important to me.
Right. Yeah, it's... there's another quote I have in there that says something like, to try to forget someone is the surest way of thinking of nothing else. It's better said than that. But I think when we try to X someone out of our life, they often become an obsession. And even if we get past the point where they're in our daily thoughts, you know, kind of eating away at us, it becomes like a dull ache. And I think the price is we lose our sense of optimism.
Wow.
We lose our sense of faith in relationships and in human beings. You know, when children are born, they have such a intense need and desire and demand to be connected. We all want to be connected. And when a relationship of someone we have cared about is severed, it's a loss that really reverberates on many, many levels. And I don't think you're really aware of the price you've paid until you've had the experience of reconciling a relationship and the joy and the satisfaction of repairing something you thought couldn't be repaired. It doesn't, I can't think of anything it compares to. It's incredible. The other thing, you know, when you reconcile, it gives you a sense of faith in human relationships. One man I'm thinking of, he reconciled with his father, and he said, you know, now in his marriage, he's willing to go so much further because he realizes that really difficult issues can be talked about and really hard things can be overcome, and differences that seem insurmountable can sometimes be bridged. And he said it has totally changed his approach to his marriage. So, you know, he reconciled with his father, and it improved his marriage. So I think that's one way. And I think it rebuilds that sense of optimism. If I could do this, if I could work this out, I could work things out with anyone.
You know, I'm suspect, like in a character like me. You can't listen to your head all the time. And there's a lot of room to hide. There's a lot of room to create obfuscation. There's a lot of room to create, you know, chaff if you just listen to the head point of view about these things. Because this reconciliation issue, these broken heart connections, I don't think my head's totally honest.
Well, pride is one of the biggest impediments to reconciliation, and it's very hard to see clearly when you're trying to reconcile. You know, we tend to see things from our point of view
exactly.
And our perspective, and it's the other person's fault, and it's very hard to take responsibility for our part. In most circumstances, both people play a role in the estrangement. You know, the only exceptions are where you're talking about abuse, you know, a wife who's being beaten or something like that, then, you know, it's the perpetrator's responsibility, and that there's no room or place for the victim to have to be humble about what they did wrong. They didn't do anything wrong. But in most other relationships, both people play a role. And one of the first steps, one critical step towards reconciliation is the humility to say, now, what was my part in this? Two sisters I'm thinking of, one of them came out as a lesbian and the other one was an Orthodox Jew. And the religious sister rejected the younger sister because she was gay and said some very hurtful things to her, like, you know, if you were homeless, I wouldn't let you and your partner come to my house. And that was a terrible thing to say to your sister. And, you know, it reflected a lot of ignorance on her part. However, the sister, the lesbian sister, for the next 16 years, she bore that injury like a flag. She went around talking about her insensitive, homophobic sister and how she'd been the victim of her religion, and now she couldn't embrace her own religion because it was so hypocritical. And for 16 years, she did that. She never once went back to her sister and said, do you still feel that way? Were you just having a bad day?
Right.
Have you maybe had second thoughts, and how do you feel about that now? And so the first sister caused the rift, but the second sister kept it going for years and years and years. And it's interesting the way that those two sisters began healing their relationship. One was a teacher and one was a librarian, and they just started talking about books at family gatherings. And that was one of the things that was very surprising to me, both in my own experience of reconciliation and in the many, many interviews I did, is that a lot of times reconciliation didn't happen because people sat down and had the big, heavy talk about the issues between them. Sometimes when you're just starting to reconnect with someone, the tenderness and the newness of the trust that you're trying to build would just be trampled if you dug up all those old issues. Because,
beautiful.
You know, you'd so easy to get sucked right back into your old position and your old emotional stance. And although there are times when we really need to speak the truth, what I've learned is that sometimes it shouldn't happen right at the beginning. And sometimes it doesn't need to happen at all, because both people have changed and transformed so much it's no longer necessary. I interviewed my mother about our reconciliation because I wanted her story to be part of this book, because she had been so hurt by the books I'd published before and everything I'd printed, and I wanted this to be a different experience, so I wanted her to have her say. And one of the first things I asked her was, what enabled you to reconcile with me? And she said, I had to let go of all the times you hurt me. You caused me tremendous pain, but holding you accountable for something that happened 15 years ago seemed counterproductive because you've changed into someone else, and for that matter, so have I. And that's true in many reconciliations. And when we hold people to who they were in the past, we don't give them the space or the possibility to change. And, you know, not everyone is going to change. Some people are going to be a jerk, you know, an arrogant, mean son of a bitch, and they're still going to be an arrogant, mean son of a bitch, and sometimes it's best to walk away from people like that.
Indeed.
But sometimes people can surprise us, and sometimes if we shift what we're doing, they're able to change. I met someone the other day who had a brother who was always talking about his terrible childhood, and he was going on and on about how rotten he had had it. And she just felt this disdain for her brother and this feeling like, just get over it, get a life, and grow up. And you know, she was very judgmental of him and not right. close, and she hated being around him. And she said one day he was going through the same litany of all the terrible things that had happened to him, and she said for the first time she really listened. And she heard what he was saying, and she turned to him and she said, "Oh my God, that sounds so terrible, and I am so sorry that all of that happened to you." And she said that moment of her really listening and finding a place of compassion completely transformed their relationship, and he never talked about his childhood again.
Wow.
He just needed someone to listen to him once. He needed that acknowledgement. And their relationship suddenly zoomed up to the present, and, you know, they're very close today.
Okay, I want to have some time left here, and we have a little bit, to talk about the fruits of reconciliation. You've, no doubt, with your research, Laura, you've seen incredible things, and just a couple stories might be adequate, but what's possible? What sort of liberating heart and mind both are possible? Because the reconciliation must be keeping something locked down, shut down in our human system. It must be that we're captive as subjects of not reconciling.
You know, aside from the things I've already mentioned, the sense of optimism, there's also regaining part of your history. This is particularly true with family members, but it could be true with a friend also. You know, let's say you had a friend that you went through college with and you were very close and you went through all those years that are so critical in our development, and then you had a rift. You know, he stole your girlfriend, you know, and then you never married her, and then you never spoke again.
Right.
And now it's, you know, 15, 20 years later, and he's divorced and you're trying to get together again. And you know, out of immaturity or whatever, this relationship was broken up. And if you regain that relationship, you regain that whole piece of your history. No one else knew you during that time. And that's incredibly valuable. There's a sense of, when I think of the relationships that I've put back together, I have a sense of continuity about my life from beginning to end, that there's people who have witnessed all the many different stages I've been through. And if I hadn't healed those relationships, I would have been the only witness to my own life. And that's lonely. I also have a poor memory. So I'm thinking of this one friend who I've known for 30 years. We healed an estrangement, and she's able to tell me stories about my past of things that I don't even remember. And that's very, very valuable. And there's also, when you go through something intense with someone and you heal a rift, it gives your relationship an incredible stability, an incredible sense of, you know, it's like any intimate relationship. The more you go through together, the more intimate the relationship is.
Indeed.
And there's nothing that replaces that.
You know, Laura, we're going to do this twice. I want to mention your website now because I want folks to realize there's a way to be in touch. It's not through the show. We need to have folks know about your website so that there is a contact possible. Would you please tell me, what is the contact website for folks?
It's www.lauradavis.net. And that's
a dot after the W, so probably.
www. Dot. Yes. Laura, L-A-U-R-A, Davis, D-A-V-I-S, all one word, dot net. And what I did there, it's a new site. I launched an online reconciliation community.
Beautiful.
So there's lots of bulletin boards. There's, in the back of the book, there's a whole discussion guide, and all those discussion guide questions are linked up on the website. So you could basically get in a virtual conversation about different aspects of the book. I have a free newsletter that comes out every 2 weeks, and there's a free checklist, Am I Ready for Reconciliation, which can help you begin to assess, is this something you want to pursue, and is this something you're ready for?
Oh, that's excellent service. Thank you, Laura. So, folks, we've got just a couple minutes left, and I think I want to put Laura on the spot here. What do you think? We've got a chance, and this can be about reconciliation. It can be about whatever else in your life, because it's been ages since I've had you here on Pathways. What are we going to tell the folks? What the fruit of your life since I've seen you last, Laura? What do you want to tell our folks? It's a chance to take a minute and just it's such a pleasure for me to get Laura Davis across from me on the mics. And I just want you to give our folks what you want them to have the most?
I think what I want to say is that all we have is right now. Right now. And that, you know, if you take a breath, that's reality. And I'm certainly a believer in going back to the past and working things out. I, you know, dedicated 10 years of my own personal healing and much of my work to teaching people about the importance of healing from the past. And yet there's a paradox there, because there comes a point where identifying with the ways we were hurt begins to limit us. Yes. It's like a sweater that's too small. And sometimes, you know, to go through your whole life saying, you know, I'm the way I am because I'm an incest survivor, or I'm the way I am because I'm the child of an alcoholic, or I'm the way I am because my first husband beat me, or I'm the way I am because my family was so poor. There's a way that identifying with how we were hurt can be very empowering for a period of time. But there really is a time when we have to put that aside and just face the rawness of being a human being responsible for ourselves. And for me, you can't tell someone when to do that. And the paradox is, when you're trying to heal, people are telling you to do that all the time. Get over it. But there comes a time when, from the inside, you know, I have worked this out enough, and I'm going to move on, and I'm responsible for my life now. And for me, that was that choice, that transition. That's what started making the whole thing of reconciliation possible, because I stopped identifying so much with the ways I was hurt.
I get it. That's what I wanted. Thank you, Laura, you sweetheart. Okay, folks, I want to mention again the book. First of all, the website, www.lauradavis.net. And the book, available everywhere, I Thought Would Never Speak Again, The Road from Estrangement to Reconciliation. My great pleasure to have Laura Davis back today, and I hope not so many years before we see you again.
Oh, no, I'm going to come back much sooner next time.
And Pathways will be back next Sunday morning. Thank you, folks, for joining us.